Welcome to the Main Mic Podcast, where we explore Joplin's real estate pulse, share community stories, and provide valuable advice. Kick up your feet, grab a drink, and let's learn together as we navigate the ins and outs of our local Joplin community. Welcome back to the Main Mic Podcast. I'm Ryan Flanagan, your host, and I have an amazing attorney. This guy got me out of jail so many times. I'm just kidding.
An indictment is not a conviction.
He is not that kind of attorney, to my knowledge, but a brilliant guy. He helps a lot of people with their estate planning, Mr. Christopher Dunn.
Yay. Please hold your applause.
Hold the applause till the end. Chris, thanks for joining us, man. Tell us a little bit. So what is it you focus on in the attorney world?
Well, my wife and I started our law firm almost 30 years ago, and said, hey, we're only going to limit our practice to business, estate, elder law type planning, and that's kind of what we do. So, Wow. Yeah, and I told my wife back then, I said, you know, if I don't want you to be offended if I, you know, if I get picked up and thrown in jail, you will not be my first phone call. Yeah. I'm going to call a real lawyer to come
get a real lawyer here.
Yeah.
All right, unless it's in the estate plan.
That's right. If you've got tax issues or estate planning issues or, you know, wills, trusts, business entities, let's sit down and talk about it.
So, well, that's good. So we're going over our financial series, kind of leading into tax season. I really want our listeners to clue in and maybe get some ideas on how they can set up, whether it be a business or just setting up things well for their family, their estate, for things to think about. It's amazing. So my father, he passed in 19, and I would say it was either earlier that year or the year before they finally made a trust. And it was like,
wow, came down to the wire.
Came down to the wire for sure. And just thinking through that, and, you know, I look at my dad, look up to him. He had a lot of things buttoned up, but just some of those things. I think you probably run across that. But tell us, you know, what's the importance of, why would somebody care to set up a will or a trust, or, you know, what's the point in doing estate planning?
Well, I think that, you know, people would rather be more organized than not. Now, getting there sometimes can be, that's the difficult part.
Sure.
You know, if someone can organize your garage for you, you would appreciate it. But if you have to take a Saturday afternoon and do it, then it's a little more daunting of a task. I think that the most important document that a lot of people don't think about would probably be like a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can only die once, but you can be out of town or lose your mental capacity more than once during your lifetime. And if you leave a piece of paper or stack of pieces of paper that basically say, if I can't sign my name to something, or if I can't make healthcare decisions, then I want this person to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's good to have a backup or two. So, you know, if that person's not available, a lot of people will say, oh, I thought, you know, well, I'm married. You know, I think my, you know, mm-hmm. you mean my wife can't do this for me, or my husband can't do this for me? And the answer is no, not without some, you know, piece of paper or some badge of authority from the court, and you kind of would like to stay out of court.
Sure.
You know, and in your line of work with real estate transactions, if something happens, if there's someone on the ground in that local area with a power of attorney, well, that transaction can continue to go. There might be a speed bump, but you don't hit a wall.
Sure.
And have to completely start over.
Well, we've hit some speed bumps even with powers of attorneys because certain ones, I think there are like some will only, they're limited
powers of attorneys,
right?
Right. And so sometimes I think that's one of the issues with a power of attorney is it's not powerful enough or it doesn't hit the powers that you need. You know, maybe it's only two pages long and, you know, although, you know, some people are critical of lawyers over lawyering things from time to time.
Sometimes it can be helpful.
It can, you know, we kind of default in our office to like a 25-page where everything in the kitchen sink.
Yep.
You know, we're only going to need 10% of the words on these papers. Right. I just don't know which 10% you're going to need.
Sure.
So we're gonna put that in there.
Yeah.
But I think you, even with a power of attorney, that's limited because, you know, a question I get a lot is, should I have a will? Should I have a trust?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell people it doesn't make a hell of beans difference. Both of them will fail you.
Ah.
And then I pause for effect.
I'm looking at you in my
Yes, and as the discomfort level begins to increase, I'll say, well, the reason is if you have a will or a trust, you also, that's phase one.
Yeah.
Phase two is making sure the name on the stuff that you own is aligned with either your will-based plan or a trust-based plan. And a lot of people are like, well, I think, you know, my situation's simple. Why don't you just give me how about we just do a will? Seems like it's cheaper. And I'll say, well, it is cheaper now, but the only place that a will can work is probate. Mm. And most people, you know, want to avoid probate.
Mm.
You know, I'll ask people, you know, what is probate?
Yeah, tell us a little bit about probate.
Well, nobody knows what it is, but it's bad. And it basically slows things down.
Sure.
Probate was actually set up back in the Middle Ages to protect the number one creditor in England, which was the crown. And so the crown...
They need to get theirs.
They got to get theirs, mm-hmm. right? So if the crown had loaned out money, they wanted to make sure they got paid back. That's why it takes a long period of time, because we want to make sure creditors get paid.
Right.
And then number two of probate is changing the name on the stuff you own, but only after we take care of, you know, creditors. That would be...
And that can get kind of confusing, I would think. Like, so at that point, you're relying on maybe a judge. Is that...
Yes, for sure.
In front of a judge.
For sure.
To determine who is to be the heir of what is left. And a will might direct that, which is great. That's a piece of the puzzle. But if you don't have a will in place, now it's up to the interpretation of what?
Well, it depends. In fact, that's one of my jokes I tell all the time is, when you go to law school and you graduate, they give you a JD degree. And do you know what JD stands for?
Do not.
Just depends.
Yeah.
Because that's how you answer almost every legal question,
right?
It seems like. It endears lawyers in our society too, because we can't seem to answer a straight question. But with...
Sounds like realtors.
Well, yeah. Stand in line, yeah. Right?
Well, hold on.
Yeah, let me find out. Get back to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't know. We have to...
That's right.
Have to call a legal
survey.
Department.
Yeah.
Survey or this contract.
Defer to somebody else.
So a probate is, you know, if you don't have any documentation at all, then whatever state that you... Probably the state that you... where you died,
mm-hmm.
that statute tells who gets your stuff.
Mm.
So if you don't want to make decisions for yourself, the state will be more than happy to step up and tell you who gets your stuff when you die. And a will at least opts out of the state instructions.
Gotcha.
But most people want to avoid probate.
All of it.
And, you know, probate judges are paid on a salary, so they just soon have fewer cases than more. And a good plan will try to avoid probate.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's why you need to get a plan. You know, you say a lot of people like to avoid that. I actually think the opposite. I think a lot of people don't get their stuff together, and they're forced into that, or their family's forced into that.
That's true.
So I'm often providing valuations and stuff, like the judge needs to see what we think this thing's valued at.
Right.
Before we can list it or whatever. And so...
And we're very appreciative. We're very appreciative for you to do that.
Yes, too. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We are here to help for sure.
Here to serve.
I think the interesting thing to me, and maybe you can help answer this, is let's say somebody passes away and they didn't really have great relationships, or maybe they don't have anybody. What happens then? Like, I imagine the notification, I don't know, does the death certificate go to the state, and then somebody in the state looks at, like, oh, what do these people own? Is that even a thing?
So, property that comes with title, like real estate, cars, bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
If that person's not here to sign the back of the title or sign a deed or, you know, write a check to close out an account, then those assets, you know, go to probate, and the judge determines who it goes to. You know, the first question, kind of, once we take care of creditors, is who, you know, was there a will? If there's no will, we look at the state statute. And the state statutes, usually, you know, we live in a four-state areas, and there's a little bit of difference in all four states. But generally, you know, it would go to spouse and children, and if children aren't there, then to grandchildren, and so on down the descendant line. If we don't have any descendants or surviving spouse, then we start looking up to like ancestors and our siblings, you know, siblings. And then if they're not there, nieces and nephews.
Mm.
And then, you know, things that make for great movies is if there aren't any of those, then we start even going further out to, you know, great aunts and uncles and first and second cousins and things like that. And that's where private investigators sometimes come into play.
Interesting. Now, how much estate resources do they actually use on this stuff, though? Because, first of all, if nobody's around to say, hey, you know, so-and-so died, I'm taking care of their stuff for them, I got to figure all this stuff out. That's usually what happens. But I'm certain there are times where people pass on and there's just nobody there.
Yes, nothing happens until somebody wants this vehicle or wants this, piece of real estate.
Sure. Maybe they're behind on taxes at some point.
Right.
County gets involved.
Exactly. After, you know, in Missouri, after 2 years, then it goes to the tax sale.
Yeah.
But you asked a question like, what does it cost? Well, you know, anytime you go to probate, there's been studies done on this nationwide, and most of the studies say somewhere between, you know, 2 to 5% of an estate is what it costs. And that can be doubled because you almost always have to get an attorney involved, and then a family member is usually involved. And many times a family member waives their fee. But you would be hard pressed to find an attorney that would be so obliging.
Sure.
So sometimes it can be, you know, twice, you know, 2 to 5%.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's of what the estate
right
bear.
Yeah. Right.
Got it. That's interesting.
So, you know, the legislatures in most states have tried to address this. They're besides owning things jointly with people.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can inherit outside of probate. There are statutes that allow you to do transfer on death or pay on death or even a deed that says, if I own this property when I die, send it, you know, deed it to these people.
Beneficiary deed.
But, you know, something that we help clients with quite a bit is, a trust arrangement to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Now, tell me the difference. I'm assuming you probably encourage people to set up a trust. Possibly.
Yes. We do a lot of trust work, and, you know, people are like, well, what's a trust?
Yeah.
And a trust is, you know, there's kind of two types of trust. One would be a revocable trust that a lot of people have where I tell people it's kind of like a little red wagon. They take the things they own, they put it in the wagon, they pull the wagon along, and everything's fine. There's really no difference in their day-to-day activities. But if they became mentally incapacitated, or if they died and they dropped the handle, then that wagon comes with an instruction manual.
Mm-hmm.
And we look in the instruction manual, it says, you know, if Chris is pulling his wagon around and he drops the handle, then Gary, you know, will pick up the handle. He looks and reads the instruction manual, and it tells him how to manage assets. It tells him who to manage it for.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm disabled, you know, that person's called a trustee.
Mm-hmm.
They would, you know, manage my assets, pay my bills, and take care of me and take care of my kids. And by definition, that means they're not taking care of other people.
Yeah.
So if you have people you don't want to get any of your stuff, you put that in the instruction manual. And then if I, you know, my wife passed away about 11 years ago. And so a lot of our assets were in her trust. And when you read the instructions of her trust, it says that I'm the new trustee. When she passed away, her revocable trust became irrevocable.
Because she's the only one that can revoke it.
Because she's the only one that can revoke it. She's not here, so it is no longer able to be revoked.
Makes sense.
And I read the instruction manual. It says, okay, trustee, you're supposed to take care of yourself as a beneficiary. You're supposed to take care of the kids. If I marry Buffy the cocktail waitress or if the roles were reversed and she married Biff the tennis pro, they're not beneficiaries.
Right.
They don't have a right to what's in that trust. In fact, if I remarry, then I don't own what is in my wife's trust because it's owned by the trust. I'm in control of it. Yeah. I get the benefit of it. But if I was married and divorced, those assets cannot become marital property because I never officially owned it. Mm-hmm. So revocable trusts, although they don't provide a lot of asset protection while you're alive and well, they can afford quite a bit of asset protection to, you know, who you want to benefit and keep unwanted people out.
Interesting. Now, I guess just having the conversation here, I guess you could assign things out, you know, you could deed away things into, let's say you wanted to deed something to Biff, the tennis pro.
Yeah.
You could do that as a trustee.
If Biff, the tennis pro, was either a beneficiary, if not, then Biff would have to pay for it.
Right. Correct.
Right.
Yeah. You could not give it to Biff.
Right. That'd be it. You read the instructions, right?
Right. Right.
So if the instructions don't have Biff's name, then by definition, you are not to distribute things just gratis to Biff. I'm sure Biff's a great guy.
Man, he's got a heck of a...
he's going to have to pay just like anybody else.
Got a heck of some topspin there for sure. So, well, cool. Okay. I'm learning a lot here. I've got a trust set up. You said you do LLC. You set business things up for folks. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, a lot of people will have like rentals or they... you know, we live in an agricultural community, and so sometimes we will take assets that we deem maybe a little bit dangerous. You know, really, rental real estate is not that dangerous, but someone could, you know, there could be a fire, something bad could happen, somebody could hurt themselves, and you want to try to limit your liability to if something went bad. Can use an LLC, sometimes, you know, limited circumstances, maybe a corporation to try to limit your exposure, you know, just not to have all your eggs in one basket.
Right. Yeah. That's good. And we were kind of going over this last week with Kevin Hardy from the IRS side, but there's a new, as of January 1st, there's a new LLC law where you have to report some things to, is it FinCEN?
FinCEN, right. The Financial Crimes and Enforcement Network.
That's it.
And actually, as of, I think last week, March 1st or March 2nd, maybe a couple, within the last couple of weeks, sometime in March, there was a federal court in Alabama that declared the Corporate Transparency Act, this reporting of information as unconstitutional. So
I was wondering when that happened. Why did we have to wait on Alabama to get off?
Well, you know, lots of legal theories come out of Alabama. And some of them good. Some of them maybe a bit suspect, but unfortunately, you know, in our neck of the woods, that's a federal court in Alabama. It'll likely go up to the circuit. I don't believe we're not in that circuit, and so we're looking with interest at that.
So that could have a big effect on whether or not this will hold.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my clients met with a big bunch of them a couple of weeks ago, and that was one of the topics we talked about. And I said, there's a lot of law firms that are, you know, filling out these reports and sending in. There's a lot of people who are waiting to see if, because there are some questions about, you know, leave it to lawyers to find questions where you don't think there are questions, but there are a few. And so I will probably not be really getting with my business clients to fill out that report till probably the third quarter.
Sure.
Let some other people go first.
Yeah. Yeah. See what happens.
Take some arrows.
Yeah. Hopefully put a stop to it before the fourth quarter.
It's, yeah. You know,
well, I'm with you. I mean, I get it. I see the good of that. There's two sides to every coin, yeah. Right? And so, you know, I can understand from foreign investments and things and
right.
People money laundering. But I also see, you know, an infringement on my privacy as a business owner and
right.
Making it my information a whole lot more accessible for maybe a lawsuit or where people could find me out or whatever. You know, sometimes
yeah.
It's not great for everybody to have every bit of information, you know?
So. Yeah, and I think a lot of the information, especially on the ownership, you could get that just by looking
Secretary's
at tax filings.
Yeah.
A tax, you know,
yep.
The FinCEN is under the United States Treasury Department. Now, they're administered by, I guess, the Department of Justice is involved there as well, but, you know, it seems like those guys could talk to one another and probably find out who owns things.
Sure.
But you wouldn't necessarily know who's in the C-suite at these companies.
Right.
But
yeah, it makes sense. Mm. Well, I appreciate that. That's some bit of knowledge. So you started your business 30 years ago. Where'd you go to school? Tell me a little bit of history on you, Chris.
Well, I grew up on a family farm. About 25 miles north of Joplin.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother still farms. I used to say he farms with my dad, but I think my dad is somewhat phasing out, although I don't think farmers ever completely
and they don't.
Leave the farm. We're just hoping that, you know, my dad would like to die on the farm, and I'm fine with that as long as he doesn't take anybody else out with him.
Right.
Because that equipment is so large.
Yeah.
But, so I grew up, went to Jasper High School, went to the University of Missouri in Columbia for undergrad, and then reached the university in Virginia for law school and practiced out there a couple of years doing what I refer to as door law, anything that walked in the door. And I did that for a couple of years. That was a baptism of fire. And then my wife in law school, she and I both graduated and passed the Virginia bar, practiced a little bit together. And then we moved to Columbia, Missouri for about a year with a firm that kind of a boutique firm that just did the type of law that we do now and decided to move back, in a sense, back to the big city of Joplin.
That's right.
When you live in Jasper, Joplin's the big city.
So that's right. It is.
Move back to the Joplin Metroplex.
We have a mall.
Yeah. we have a mall. So that's, yeah, that was 1997.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you're a big supporter of Missouri Southern Athletics.
Yeah.
Or Missouri Southern in general. So how did you just the local heroes? You're just...
Well, you know, we want to be a part of the Missouri Southern, the local, you know, university, because it's part of our community. It's a very important part of our community.
I agree.
And I played athletics when I was in... You can't tell from me my looking now, but I played some hoop back in the day.
Heck yeah.
And enjoy watching athletics. Enjoyed working as a booster with the athletic department. Well, my kids and my fiance and two of her sons and my mom and dad, we went up to Kansas City to watch the MIAA basketball tournament, even though both of our teams were out like in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very competitive and it's entertaining.
It looked like Pitt State kind of made it.
Pitt State did very well. They put both their teams in the final, and the girls looked really good and certainly beat the other team. And unfortunately, the Northwest Missouri boys looked really good.
Really good.
And Pitt State didn't play poorly, but you just can't ever let your guard down against a team like Northwest.
Wow. That's cool. Well, for those listening, guys, so, hopefully you picked up a few nuggets here, but what's important is that you make some plans for your future. And if you have assets, obviously figuring out those plans. Chris is an amazing resource. I'm sure there are other attorneys that do what you do. We won't mention them here, but
there are, and they're amicable.
We
have met and we talk to each other.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's friendly here. But folks can find you. Where can they find you if they wanted to go to your own?
Yeah, so we have a blog. We've got which you can go to our website, which is protectingwealth.com.
Did you hear that? Protectingwealth.com. So that's really what this is about. Hopefully, this series. And there are ways in which we didn't get into a lot of these things, but I'm sure you help people also find ways to invest or do things legally that can help them from a tax implication standpoint.
Yeah, asset protection.
Get into some of the asset protection stuff. So we're kind of in this financial series just talking about, how we can help our listeners understand what they can do to set themselves up. Maybe what they need to consider walking into this tax season, and having you on is going to be a great asset. And hopefully our listeners will give you a ring. But you were saying your South Town, what's the address?
4000 South Rangeline Road.
4000 South Rangeline Road. It's by the old, it was the old Wheeler. Is it still called Wheeler?
No, Wade's RV.
Wade's RV, right before you get to Wade's RV there on the left-hand side, or it'd be the east side,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Depends on which way you're driving.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, you were saying, so protectingwealth.com?
Yes.
Protectingwealth.
We've got some video resources on there as well as some booklets they can download, articles. We like to educate to motivate.
There you go. That's good.
So hopefully you'll find, a lot of educational material. The only people who still have a lot of questions are, engineers. Those are a special type of American.
Yeah, we don't sell houses.
And I'll tell you what, I love engineers. I have tons of engineers in my family, and I was an engineer for 2 years at the University of Missouri, and so I switched over to business, and all my electives were like calculus and physics and, things I use every day.
That's right. That's right. That's good stuff for sure. So, well, Chris, thank you for coming in. Is there a number for your law firm? I know it's probably online, but if you guys want to reach out, ask some of his staff or set up an appointment with you. But
yeah, and we do a workshop from time to time on estate planning. We do that.
You know what? I'd love to have you up here.
Yeah, we can do that sometime.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, guys, stay tuned. We'll promote something where you guys can come up and maybe meet Chris and ask some questions. We can kind of go through, I'm sure. You have a presentation.
Well, we've got the Dog and Pony Show just to help.
Yeah.
Start conversations. So that's it's a tool.
Yeah.
I'm not. I like to take questions as we go along. It's way more fun for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll be in the back just throwing them.
Yeah, I'll also provide you some softball.
They'll put some sliders in there. So, number, 417?
623-2062.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on. Guys, stay tuned for more from Chris here in the near future. We will have him. We'll do a little series up here and have a host something at our office. It'll be great. Check out his website, protectingwealth.com. Go see him at 4000 South Rangeline or give him a call. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying tuned to our podcast. Next week, we'll have our financial planner, Mr. Lane Clevenger. Stay tuned and God bless.